Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
All right, it's Thursday night and there is a lot to get into over the next little while. Delighted to say Brian O'Driscoll is on the line. Evening, Brian.
Evening, Adrian. How are you?
Flying the thanks. Lots to get into here. So for some of the teams that are still involved and for some of those not so much, we might kick off in that regard. So like looking at the quarterfinal lineup from the teams that were spat out over last weekend, the top 14 versus pro 14 versus premiership debate seems like fairly endless that we come back to every now and then, but it's fairly stark at the minute. Toulon might have fancied their chances of making it. Six French teams left in the tournament. Are we just looking at a somewhat meaningless snapshot in time, or is there something deeper to be worried about here for the English and Irish teams and beyond?
It's cyclical, isn't it? You could be having another conversation this time next year, or indeed last year, where you know there's concerns around French rugby. Is the top 14 not what it used to be? So I think you're going to have a changing of the guard depending on the cycles within certain teams as well. I think if you look at the reemergence of Toulouse, the continued emergence of Racing, and then Clermont always in the mix there, thereabouts, and then a couple of bolters in Bordeaux in particular, but then Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle playing some great rugby and deserving to be there too. And I suppose you marry that against the standard of what we've seen over the Pro 14 over the course of the year. You can't have too many arguments that there aren't more teams in the knockout stages. It's been runaway from a Leinster perspective, with Ulster, you know, competing and Munster likewise, but pretty much everyone else has fallen by the wayside. And even the manner in which Scarlets managed to go out in the last 16 at home to, excuse me, there's my reminder to check in with you. Sorry about that. even with Scarlets limping out to a Sale team that hadn't won a game so far in the tournament was almost embarrassing from their perspective. So it's the year that it is, and it just happens that France look as though they're emerging from a national team perspective, even though they still lost a couple of games in the Six Nations. So I don't think we don't have to read into it overly. So you're going to have these sort of peaks and troughs in Europe, and that's what we want. You know, it's what you expect. If it was the same, you know, Pro 14 teams, the same Premiership teams, or same French teams year on year, we'd be bored.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that at times can make the Premiership teams and the organisation generally a bit wobbly. We'll see what happens over the next while. You mentioned, and I'm glad to see, a bit like the patrons at Augusta, you've given La Rochelle its proper title there. He's insisted on it by way of contract. Ronan O'Gara's La Rochelle. And we got a good chance to see them on Friday night in a way that, like, it's difficult to see the top 14 a lot, but they look good against Gloucester. And I know that he was on last night as well, talking about having looked at Manchester City, seen some of their style and how they play when they don't have the ball, and being influenced by some of that. Talk to us about what you were seeing from the last weekend. What sort of style can Munster fans expect to see at some point down the track?
I think a lot of good coaches, what they're capable of doing is adapting to the squads that they're given. And I think we've seen certain coaches in the past fall down where they've just had one blueprint to bring from team to team to team. And if they can't, you know, vary their options depending on what their strengths are or what their strong points within their squad, they fall flat on their face. And I don't know, without naming names, I think a good example of that is someone like Rob Penny, who came from a successful team in New Zealand, came to Munster, tried to play that same wide pattern, which was very against the ethos of what Munster rugby was built on. It took a couple of years for them to probably integrate it, and just by the time they were getting a hang of it, he was off to Japan, was it? And then they reverted back to type. So I do think you have to come in and understand your squad, understand what they're capable of giving you, where your real strengths are. There's no point in playing a forward-dominated game if, you know, you've got a light pack and a mobile pack. You've got to play fast and frenetic and all-encompassing. So I think, first of all, as a coach coming in, you've got to identify the makeup of your squad, what you've inherited, and what you need to bring in to allow you to play the game that you hopefully will play. And that's why these things always take 2, 3, 4, 5 years sometimes to get to the point of what you want to achieve. And I see, we see in the football that coaches are never given that opportunity, particularly in the Premiership, that if it's a result-based business. So if you don't get it done within a year or less than a year, you're gone. A bit more latitude is given to rugby coaches. But at the same time, you know, boards in rugby teams will still want some form of results or some form of improvement to be able to hang their hat on and know that they've got the right guy. Mm. And with Rog, he's gone away and obviously done things the hard way. The easy thing would have been to do would have been to stay in Ireland via, you know, through AIL or through the Munster Academy. But he went away to Paris. He made the even harder trip, albeit it was, you know, it was with one of the best teams in the world, down to the Crusaders, you know, upping his family, bringing them down there. That's not an easy thing to do. And then he's come back and taken a head coaching role in La Rochelle. And now we're seeing, you know, the fruit of all of his time spent in these different locations and the IP that he's taken from different parts of the world and the different IP from individuals that he has worked with as well. So I think we're just getting an initial sense of what Ronan O'Gara's style is. But, you know, that that soundbite that he gave to BT after the game was brilliant listening, from a multitude of reasons. He's always so honest. He's always so enthusiastic. But there's a thoughtfulness side to Rog that people don't probably see, an emotional intelligence of understanding what makes people tick and not. You know, the appreciation for having to treat the Fijians slightly different than everybody else, because that's in their makeup. That's the way they are. They're laid back, and you have to roll with that. There's no point in being antagonized by, you know, someone arriving 2 weeks late for preseason. Every Fijian in every club seems to be doing that. So it's just it's a real intelligence of how to get the most out of a squad. And that KBA, you know, keep ball alive, that's been a thing for years. It's just he's now phrased it, you know, he's got a pseudonym in that. You know, now everyone's thinking it's the gospel. Toulouse have been doing that for years. It's just it's a piece from New Zealand that he's taken that now all of a sudden Europe has inherited.
That the packaging of it is as important as anything else. Just on the that side that you mentioned to him, that maybe people don't get to see so much, was that something that you saw in him as a player, or has that become Ronan O'Gara 2020, 2021, and he's worked on that with those clubs he's been at? In terms of thoughtfulness
I think he was always a well thought out player. In that he was a heads up player. He didn't like just running through something for the sake of it. And obviously, you know, we know about his mental toughness, about his kicking game. He'd huge inner belief in what he was doing and what he was, you know, the way he was playing. Backed himself 100% of the time, and it looks as though he does that as well from a coaching perspective. But he's obviously identified where La Rochelle are strong as well. If you look at that Kiwi influence at 8, 9, and 10, you know, he's got an appreciation and understanding of how to get the most out of them now as well. And when you've got a spine of a team that are, you know, have been involved in All Black success and World Cup success, you've got to make that thrive within your team and bring that out where possible. So you marry that with some of the other parts, some of the French internationals. He just has what looks like a great team, a great squad. But I'm sure that's taken a bit of sifting through. And he's even spoke about the necessity for a bit more team bonding. You know, I've never played in France. I don't know what it's like being involved in a French squad, but there's a need, he said, to pull it all together a little bit more and play, get them playing for one another. So I think we're just at the beginning of what Ronan O'Gara is capable of delivering, I feel.
Yeah, and we're constantly talking about him being the next Munster Ireland coach, and I'm sure that exposure on BT, as you mentioned, and the interview afterwards will have done his prospects maybe going across the water, maybe no harm either. But as you say, he's not going anywhere anytime soon, you assume.
It's inevitable. I think the other thing as well with him, he probably he's plenty of time to come back and coach Munster and potentially coach Ireland. You know, he's only 44. Yeah. Maybe 45. He's building this international CV. All of a sudden, everyone's talking about him. You know, what's the hurry out of La Rochelle? If he could go and potentially go and win them a Bouclier, or maybe even go and get to a European final or win, you know, Europe with them, well, his stock is going to go through the roof. But if he doesn't manage to do that, what's the hurry in coming back? Because sometimes as a coach, you've got to be careful how quickly you get to the summit, because when your time is up at the summit, it's unless you're going to go and bounce around a la Eddie Jones, which is an unusual thing to do from international team to international team. You know, you have to realize that the ultimate is probably coaching your national team. Everything after that will be a little bit of a disappointment. Even if he goes and coaches another national team, it won't be the same as coaching his own national team, or coaching, you know, from a coaching his own province point of view. There's you know, so much of a thrill in that. So he has to take his time in getting there and continue building his coaching acumen. And, you know, if it takes another 4 or 5 years, they'll wait for him, because the cycle will be right if the timing is right.
Yeah, he's not going to follow the Sam Allardyce route to coaching and do a tour of clubs. That looks certain at this stage. So just I don't know if they feature in your three picks of potential winners of this tournament, and how much that's changed, Brian, from what you saw last weekend. Who are you thinking now?
I think it's very hard to shy away from even though two of the French teams have to go away in Toulouse and Racing, you know, they've been the form teams over the last couple of years, getting to semi-finals and finals, and just looking at what they had to do in the last 16, particularly Toulouse going to Thomond Park, and, you know, they were having it hard. It was put to them, and then they responded and reacted, and they have an all-conquering game. They have the muscle up front with the subtleties of a mobile front row, able to throw offloads, but then they've got the firepower of their halfbacks, and then Colby and LaBelle on the wings. I just think, and that's with loads of injuries in their back line as well. I do feel as though with guys pulling the strings that are in key positions there, they're going to be a very difficult prospect. And I fancy them to go to Clermont and win this weekend. And then Racing down in Bordeaux are a bit of a bolter, really, in this regard. They, you know, no one would have anticipated them coming through. They've got a couple of good French internationals running things, particularly in Jalibert, but I just feel as though the power of Racing will be too much. So, you know, they're the two obvious French teams. I think La Rochelle are probably in behind them, because I think they will win at home, but it, you know, the semi-final will be more interesting, but they're, of course, they're capable of going the whole way on the basis of what we've seen so far. So they're the three French teams, but I think, you know, the top two, the Toulouse and Racing, and then the winner of Exeter and Leinster. I think the winner very likely will come from those three teams, and it's hard to call this weekend's game. Leinster Exeter, I bet against Leinster 2 weeks ago against Munster, and I just refuse to do it again. It's going to be a very close run thing against the reigning champions in Sandy Park, with very difficult prospects. Teams that kind of play similar enough styles in that they're not huge risk takers, but they've got some really nice X factor that sometimes put a little gloss on an arm wrestle performance. And you look at the scores that Exeter managed to get after going 14-0 down last weekend against Lyon. They just ground them, get into the opposition 22, and they more often than not come away with 5-pointers from 5-10 yards out.
Mm. Is there, like, we don't know what we're going to get with Leinster as part of the issue here, because we, you know, the Munster game, they were less than convincing. They had last weekend off. We're unsure about what they get. I'm sure that the coaches will have been trying to replicate as much of the intensity of the level of match that they're going into this weekend as possible. What's your sense of what we're going to see from Leinster this weekend, Brian? Is it and how the off week might have impacted on them?
I think the off week is positive for some and negative for some. It's, you know, you look at the internationals that had played you know, big internationals and then straight into a Pro 14 final, even though some of them were sitting on the bench. You know, they will have been thankful for an extra week's rest. Whereas you look at the non-internationals that would have been chomping at the bit to take on a European powerhouse in Toulon, another opportunity in what you would have envisaged being a victory for Leinster at home, such as their record there against that Toulon outfit. And what those individuals, the likes of Rory O'Loughlin, those sort of guys, would have wanted to do is put in a big performance and make it all the more difficult if certain players came back from injury this week for them to be dropped. And not getting that opportunity to kind of reinforce their standing in the team is a frustration. You want to play the biggest European games, irrespective of what circumstances have found you within the team. And the guy in possession is a dangerous person if he's playing well. So I don't know what the Leinster team's going to be and whether the likes of Gary Ringrose is going to be back or not. You'd hope that many of those that were selected that last weekend will get a run out this weekend. But it's going to be a really bruising encounter, you know, close to the physicality of a test match, because you've got that many internationals playing against one another. And with so much at stake, it does feel as though these are two of the teams at the very top of Europe.
Yeah, even looking at Exeter's game last weekend then, and the slow start that they had, and they're 14 points to nil down, and you're looking at Leon thinking, well, at least the uneducated amongst us are looking at Leon thinking maybe they could actually get something done here. What, is there anything in how that came about that Leinster could be looking at in terms of how to exploit Exeter this weekend, or was it just a case that they were caught a bit cold and it's not going to be... there were shades of Leinster's exit from Europe last season about it. Obviously, the outcome's slightly different for the team that went behind. But anything in it, Brian, do you think that Leinster could be looking at thinking, actually, there is something in that for us?
I think you've got to be brave against the best teams, don't you? And, you know, it's unlikely that you're going to out-Exeter, grind a team down. So I think you need a little bit of stardust in there. I saw a really interesting stat after 10 minutes where it was 4-0 on the offload front to Leon. They were 14 points to nil up. So that shows, you know, take a little bit of risk, you know, high risk, high reward. Mm. And I do feel as though you've got to, you know, to have that little bit of cutting edge, that little bit of a differentiator between the best teams, you just have to force the occasional pass and trust your skill set and go with your gut. And I think that's a really interesting thing that sprung out from the off. The other thing there where Exeter really struggled last weekend was their line-out was as bad as it's been for a long time. And that's why you'd imagine, irrespective of, you know, who the personnel might be back fit this weekend, that Devon Toner will be back in there and trying to marshal things, putting pressure under Luke Cowan-Dickey and Johnny Gray and the other Johnny in the second row. You'd have to get after them and try and starve them from first phase possession. Now, they can score a bit like Leinster. They can score from transition, from kick return. They don't hang their hat on just set piece. But if you can be a disruptor in that area, you can stop that first phase possession and kind of negate that their attacking threat. Well, it stops them from getting the obvious advantage line and getting into their game and into their flow. So that's an area that I'm sure Leinster will target in a big way this week. But one thing that I did notice that Exeter are doing brilliantly well, they're doing their screen passing like the best of rugby league teams. And I think that's one area that Leinster will have to be very mindful. You know, they're creating these little triangles for themselves with trail runners in behind the ball receiver and then, you know, a front door option. So you've got to respect that person right until the pass is given. And then a second triangle coming off the trail runner that gets the ball. So it's like a pocket of three, and then that trail runner creates another pocket of three with two other players on the outside. They scored a fantastic try with O'Flaherty from first phase last weekend. And I just haven't seen too many other teams getting the timings of their run, the acceleration, the timing of the pass, good quality passing right on cue. And if Leinster are going to jump out of the line and make reads, they have to get their timing right, because Exeter are capable of pulling that apart.
Is that the only way to defend against it?
No, it's not. I think you can defend as a unit. I think Charlie Natai last week for Leon thought he could read through on Joe Simmons and get him ball and all, but he's clever enough to hold enough depth to encourage you out of the line, but gives himself enough leeway to be able to get the pass away. And if he does that and you get a dogleg in defense, it just means that the inside defender is going to have to work harder to plug that hole. It creates more trouble for you. And Leon didn't defend as a unit. You know, the first two defenders bid in and the winger decided to stay out. If you're going to make a bad decision, you might as well make a bad decision as a collective and try and problem solve that way. It's one thing, one rule of a winger defensive play is if you're 13 bites in, doesn't matter whether it's good call or not, you bite in as well and try and shut it down and let the scramble try and, you know, get to the outside. If you can force pressure on that player coming around the corner and force them into a hurried pass or a long lobby pass, that gives your scramble an opportunity to get back in the point. But that's not what Leon did. So I think Leinster can learn a bit from that.
Rob Baxter's comments on the two statements was fairly optimistic. I think he was sort of brushing off their early exit as crap more than anything else. The Joe Simmons versus Johnny Sexton conversation, Brian, and like, he's a guy who's a Heineken Cup winning captain, player of the match in the final last year, and no caps to his name. And I was reading a couple of comments from Andy Good over the last couple of days from Dylan Hartley over the last couple of days talking about his non-selection for England, and how the more the media particularly are calling for him to be included, the more Eddie Jones is going to resist that, which seems like for a 24-year-old guy who seems destined for the top, certainly at international level, seems somewhat penal. But can you talk to us about that, and maybe a little bit about what we can expect to see from him, and how Leinster might try to counteract him this weekend?
Yeah, he's kind of just he goes about his business quietly, doesn't he? He's a facilitator of other players, but you know, there's a lot to be said for that type of player too. Particularly if you look at England and the firepower that they possess, you know, being in centre when they've got a full team to choose from. It seems amazing that at this point Joe Simmons hasn't even been capped or hasn't come to the attention really of Eddie Jones. It's also a testament to the guy that they've named him as the club captain at 24 or 25 years of age. So he obviously has the respect of the team to put the onus on your out half, your goal kicker, and the focal point of your team at such a young age as your captain too. It really does speak volumes for what sort of person he is and the head on his shoulders. It clearly is a very calm, clear thinker in flustering situations. So it sounds like he's done all the things he needs to do. They're all scratching their heads down in Exeter, wondering how he hasn't been capped so far. But he keeps churning out the performances for them. And as soon as you think that, you know, he becomes this facilitator for others to be the strike runners, and you leave a little bit of a space, he doesn't need a second invitation. He knows where the try line is too. He's happy to have a break. He might play the ball off the line a little bit. He doesn't get hit too much on the advantage line, but he bides his time for that opportunity, for that mismatch to come, and he will gas, you know, any front five that he might find defending on his inside. So a very, very clever player, very, very good goal kicker, doesn't miss much. So he'll be an absolute handful to make sure that he gets poor quality possession, first of all, and then he's hurried into making rash decisions by the line speed that Leinster possess on Saturday afternoon.
Okay, and you've already said that you're not doubling down in your poor predictions. You're sticking with Leinster here.
Yeah, like it's in all of these things when you're asked a prediction, you know, this is toss of a coin. Yeah. It could go either way. It really could, and I just get less flack when I pick my own team when they lose.
Yeah, people expect that if it's a wrong prediction, you were being loyal, so it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
You're watching Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball. It's all with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team of us, everyone in. A few more bits I want to get your thoughts on, Brian, including Munster, who obviously been licking their wounds over what's happened over the last couple of weeks. Is there a chance that like, there's been a lot of writing this team off and writing the squad off and saying they're a million miles off the mark. Is there a chance that they're not, that they actually ran Leinster? Maybe people expected that score to be, even given what we saw, maybe a little bit wider, the margin of victory to be a little bit wider on Leinster's side at the end. But they ran them somewhat close. They gave it a right goal last weekend, and that actually they're not a million miles off if a few little things would click for them. Or is the truth that they're actually far away from where they want to be?
I think when they're first 15, fires on all cylinders. They're an absolute match for most teams around Europe. But they struggle in a couple of areas. I think they you know, it feels like we've been laboring the point for a while now that they do struggle in the front five. And that's, you know, when you get to semi-finals, finals, and you're looking for a platform to be laid for you, unfortunately, they haven't been able to deliver. And even the likes of Tadhg Byrne, who was in the form of his life in the Six Nations, had such a quiet game, looked very tired in that final. And when your best players aren't firing for you, you know, it's a real uphill battle, because you expect that platform to be laid, be it through work rate and just getting you the platform, the advantage line that you need as a back line and as a back row to be able to play your best game. They were a good bit behind in that Leinster game, but if they played this weekend, it might be a different situation. So I think we have to be mindful of not thinking that Leinster are this runaway train that can't be caught. I think it does feel as though the gap has been closed by the quality of Munster play this season, but then Leinster look as though they're continuing to improve as well. There's a way to go, but I don't think all is lost from a Munster perspective. I don't think they have the same strength and depth in their bigger squad. And I think if you look at the amount of caps that, you know, the younger second rows, the Ryan Bears, the Ross Maloney's, these guys have gotten. Like, I think Ross Maloney has played his 100th game for Leinster already. And counter that with the likes of Thomas O'Hearn and how few appearances he's gotten this year. I think Munster have to start investing in some of their younger players.
Would you do that pretty quickly, given your point about the tight five almost? Is that something you tried to do pretty quickly?
I think it has to happen soon. Mm. And you'll get, as a coach, the public and the media and your fans will cut you a bit of slack if they start seeing an integration of more academy players more regularly. And I can understand the frustrations of the likes of Sweetenham and JJ being let go and then Jenkins coming in at the same week. But at the same time, that's going to bolster their tight five, which has been their problem. And you look at him and Orgie Snyman coming back in straight away, that has the makeup of a very different tight five, where they've been missing better scrummaging second rows. The inspiration of knowing you've got a real bit of grizzle in there as well. Like, unfortunately, from Munster's perspective, you know, missing out on Orgie Snyman, getting 8 minutes from him this season, they could have been a very, very different team with him in the second row. They really could. That could be the difference. So they just need a little bit of steel back in their team up front. But I do think they need to start integrating some of these academy players that are destined to be big names for Munster in the future. Why wait another season or two for their development? Get them in there, get them playing games. They don't have to be the biggest games, but give them experience and get them comfortable in that environment.
Yeah, and like, maybe if you're Stephen Larkham, you're looking at all that thinking, like, if only this tight five would come right, I could show them what I can do here. I mean, I don't know if that's simplifying things, but I think we've got a bit of a sense of what he might be able to bring to Munster, even over the last year, in terms of style developing into a bit more free-flowing. And links now this week with a potential move back to the Waratahs. Are you, if you're a Munster fan, is that something that you're concerned about? I mean, I know that if it happens, they'll come out and they'll replace him and they'll say everything is rosy and on we go. But is that a blow to Munster if Stephen Larkham is leaving at this stage?
Yeah, I think it is, because you've got to start afresh with someone else and someone with different ideas. And as much as they will need to, if someone else came in and replaced Stephen Larkham, you know, there is 2 years of work gone in. And I do think we're starting to see signs of a development in skill sets. The quality of passing has seemed much better this year. There's been some brilliant offloading tries, albeit, you know, maybe not against the strongest of opposition, but they're willing to push the pass. So I do feel as though the final wasn't a reflection of where Munster have come from. I thought we saw really great aspects of play from them last weekend against Toulouse. They didn't panic when they were making line breaks. They were, you know, picked the right passes. They looked as though they're cutting edge. We were playing heads-up rugby, so there was lots to be impressed with. But then you come up against teams that can win the game with crazy X factor, and it's very frustrating when you lose to that. So I don't feel as though losing Stephen Larkham would, in any shape or form, be there's a silver lining to that.
Okay.
You want the integration of a coach like that with that kind of IP and that ability to understand and develop players. to stay the course. And like I said, these things happen take three or four years. And he's only been there a season and a half. Proper chance, you know, getting all his players back from World Cup. So that last season was a bit of a write-off. This year was a much improved. Another preseason next year, and they'll be improved again with the likes of Joey back too and Fish. So, yeah, I don't think it's all doom and gloom from a Munster perspective, to be honest. But it's just that Leinster have continued to stretch out and continue to improve. I think the gap, you know, doesn't feel as though it's closing like it should be.
Yeah, they might just need a bit of stability there over the next while. I'm going to ask you about the Women's Six Nations. Brian, obviously kicks off from an Irish point of view, at least this weekend with the Wales game. It's been obviously 6 months since they've had a competitive match. There's been no AIL. It's a bit of a weird format, but everywhere I've read and heard and listened to the Women's Six Nations in association with Guinness, everybody's predicting an Ireland win, and it's just by how much.
Yeah, I think there's a real responsibility on everyone, on us, you know, and off the ball in the media to promote the Women's Six Nations. You know, they've had the rough end of the stick during this pandemic, not getting any AIL rugby, not playing in international for over 6 months. Unfortunately, the game's going to clash with the Leinster fixture this weekend, so they probably mightn't get the eyeballs that it deserves or that you would hope it will for future Six Nations games. But I think the only way of us getting, you know, involved is by promoting it, by watching it, by talking about it. And ultimately, that's how the standards will improve. And that's how, you know, younger generations will, you know, get a sense for the appetite to play the game. It all feeds itself. And if we write it off and say, well, you know, Women's Six Nations, women's rugby, it's not for me. You've got to give it a chance. You've got to try and pick the good moments out of it. You've got to try and tweet about it and show someone. There was a beautiful offload from one of the French girls last week in their game, and something that if Sonny Bill did, everyone would be waxing lyrical. I think you've got to try and promote and push that sort of content forward to show that there are some great things to be taken from Women's Six Nations, and the more we push it, the more we promote it, the better it will get as a product too.
Yeah, turns out if you can't see it, you can't be it. There's a fair bit of logic to it. All this rugby this weekend, I presume, is going to play havoc with your Augusta watching.
Yeah, it's going to be non-existent, isn't it? Mm. Tonight I'll get a little bit in, and then I don't even know if I'm gone to the recreation ground tomorrow. I've got Leinster, Exeter, and then Sunday night I won't get back. I'll get the last four holes on Sunday, maybe, if I'm lucky. What an absolute shambles.
Shambles. Well, the way it's gone, you won't be missing Rory McIlroy anyway, by all accounts.
Is that right?
Not a great start.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Listen, enjoy the rugby, and we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks, Brian.
Cheers. Can I correct my pseudonym rather than acronym, or acronym rather than pseudonym from earlier on?
Go on, yeah. What should it be?
No, that was it. No, I just chose the wrong phraseology.
So, okay, right.
It's only been weighing on my mind for the last
Not been able to concentrate. I get you. Thanks a million.
So all
good
that
luck.
Nonsense I was talking.
Yeah, forget about that. We'll start again. It's fine. It's not live. We'll start again. Good luck.
All right. Talk to you. Bye.
Brian O'Driscoll on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
The OTB Podcast Network.